Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise. We have a very interesting show for you today. We are actually going to do a recap show of 2015 and many of the things that we have talked about over the last 12 months. We did a show just like this at the end of 2014, so we're going to tackle it again here at the end of 2015, and Lou and I will be delving into a number of subjects, talking about manufacturing in general, where it is, where it's going, or where we think it's going. What's happening in aerospace, what automotive looks like, what's happening in education. I mean, this is a big area for manufacturers. You've heard a lot of talk about the skills gap. So we'll be addressing some of the issues surrounding the education portion to help manufacturers. We're going to be talking a little bit about the government, with some things that have happened there, particularly some recent things that have happened there, and what the effect of that is likely to be on manufacturing. We'll talk about many of the industry associations that we have interfaced with over the last 12 months. Been very pleased to work with some of the top industry associations for manufacturing all across the country, and we certainly have been honored to be at their shows, both at the ISM show out in the Phoenix area for ISM and in Chicago for FabTech. We'll talk a little bit about oil, gas, and mining and what's happening in that industry segment. That's a rough and rocky road there. Certainly technology is going to be an issue that we will address when we chat about that one. And then sometime towards the end of the show, we'll begin talking a little bit about the economy. You know, what has happened with the economy, what it looks like 2016 might look like. I mean, everyone's kind of guessing on this one, so we'll have to see how that plays out. And we'll give you some insight that we've had from some of the guests that we've had on the show as it relates to manufacturing. So while I wait for Lou to get in the studio here, he's gathering some data sheets for us for this particular show. Because there's a lot of information to cover, let's just talk about manufacturing in general. I mean, we've heard this from some of our guests that manufacturing has just barely reached the employment and production levels they were at in 2007. You know, while the rest of the economy has recovered fairly well, and employment certainly is sitting at about 5%, which is that mythical full employment number. Manufacturing isn't quite there yet. Close, but not quite. And they haven't gained ground, even though there's been some interesting developments in manufacturing plant construction. There has been some expansion in that area. So that's an area that's kind of a bright spot. But in terms of manufacturing overall, we're kind of where we were before, which is interesting because manufacturing represents 20% of our economy. It is 20% of the GDP, and it's about 17.6 or 17.8 million jobs that manufacturing represents all across the country. Now, I can't tell you if that includes all of the people who might get lumped into non-manufacturing that actually work in a manufacturing plant. As that sounds, one of the things that we heard over the course of the year is that some of the jobs that exist in a manufacturing plant get lumped into the services sector of the headcount because they're not plant job count. So we haven't delved into that a bit. But we did hear that from a couple of our guests on the show. So that 17.6 million jobs may actually be higher, and we think it is. You've heard that manufacturing is 11 or 12% of GDP. We actually think it's 20% of GDP if you take all of those jobs and add them into the manufacturing number. So that's where we're getting our 20%, whereas, for instance, the National Association of Manufacturers is 12% of GDP. And they calculate it however they calculate it. Not saying that they're wrong or we're right, but it's a significant portion of what's happening out there. And, you know, there's an interesting fact floating around that not many of you may be familiar with unless you're in manufacturing, and you're probably as gray in your hair as I am, and that is, coming out of every recession in the United States, manufacturing has been the sector that led the country out of the recession. And that's because if the country isn't making anything, there's nothing to buy. And manufacturing tends to take 6 to 9 months to make something, to get it out to where the consumer can buy it. So that's why manufacturing tends to be a leading indicator, both going out of a recession and going into a recession, which is why you hear so much talk about manufacturing, why people watch the ISM number so carefully, because it is a leading indicator for the rest of the United States. I know we've heard from ISM that if the non-manufacturing sector is above 55%, then that sector is holding up and can hold up manufacturing a bit. But if that begins to dip, then you could have a challenge if manufacturing is dipping at the same time, which is one of the things that we saw in December when the ISM number went below 50 for the first time in over 30 months. We don't think it's a trend, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. So overall, manufacturing has been strong. It's been in a kind of a six-year recovery since 2009. It has not yet reached its 2007-08 levels before the Great Recession. And so we're kind of waiting for manufacturing to make that recovery.
Hey, Timmy.
Oh, there's Lewis back in the office with some of his data sheets. I know he was out there grabbing stuff on, for instance, aerospace, because that's one of the subjects.
Actually, I was stuck in traffic on the Beltway.
That I can believe.
Well, I wonder which politician in Washington voted to build that piece of dung.
Yeah, they love to build those around major metro areas as a bypass.
Well, it's better than in India, because when I was in India a year ago on a project, I drove into a traffic circle, and it turns out that their traffic circle goes in different directions. So if you want to go left, they go left. If you want to go right, they go right. Very difficult to maneuver. And then, of course, there's the odd cow. Anyhow, sorry, I'm late. Catch me up, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, we talked to our audience about manufacturing, where it is in general, and it's just kind of recovering from the 2007-08 Great Recession debacle, and where employment's at. But we're really at a point now, Lou, where, and you've done a lot of research on that, and your company, All Metals and Forge Group, which sponsors the show, does a lot of business in aerospace. So, you know, what's happening in aerospace? Seems like it's a real hot industry.
Well, aerospace, historically, going back decades, typically was an industry where you had four good years and six bad years. And matter of fact, we as a aircraft forger shied away from that to build it with more stable markets where we can plan out our marketing and so on. It turns out, though, that aerospace has now been really strong for 5-6 years. And Boeing has right now the largest backlog that they've ever had. They've got actually a 10-year backlog. So that puts them at 16 years of good business. And what continues to support that is that the global aerospace fleet has gotten old. It's gotten old. It's gotten inefficient. It's gotten there's pollutants. There's high costs of fuel. So now they've made these new engines, and there are other new engine technologies that are on the drawing board that's going to make it extremely efficient to fly and replace the old aircraft. There's going to be, over the next 20 years, about 40,000 aircraft that are going to be built. 10,000 here, 10,000 in Europe, and 20,000 in Asia, primarily China. China right now, even though they've got a bit of a financial glitch and bubble, they're building new airports all over the country. It's a lot cheaper to build an airport than it is to build a highway system, like the Eisenhower federal highway system, which is I-91 and 95 and all the rest of them, that it's cheaper for them to build that and to support the aircraft industry. So all in all, aircraft is looking very strong, and fortunately we are involved in that, and we're looking forward to it. Now, I gather you must have already talked a little bit about the oil and gas industry.
No, I haven't.
The good news is that oil and gas, even though the price of oil and gas is down to oil is down to the mid 30s. There are countries in the world and that are selling it for 20. ISIS is out there stealing all they can and selling it for 20, black marketing it to the Russians and paying maybe a little bit more than the 20. And but nonetheless, it's a lot lower than market price. So that's the situation. So the lower cost oil helps
some industries.
Appreciate your call and your time. Thank you for your patience while holding. We'll be with you momentarily.
Well, now we've got some kind of a technical glitch and we've run the hold. On Lou's end at All Metals and Ford Group. So we've got hold music playing. And we'll have to clean that up. So I apologize while you're listening to hold music. If you've ever called All Metals and Ford Group, this is the hold music.
Your call is important to us, and we're doing our best to assist you. Please continue to hold. We'll be with you in just a moment.
So they may have to hang up on their end and dial back in to clean this up here. Kind of an odd thing to have happen. It's difficult to have a staff here while we've got old music playing.
We know your time is valuable, so thank you for your patience while holding. Someone will be speaking with you momentarily.
Who you may have to call back in as a guest.
Hang up on that call. He's asking to hold you.
He's trying to...
Okay, it sounds like we got rid of our hold music. I don't know yet whether we've got Lou back in action here.
I think I'm back.
Oh, there he is. He's on the air. Great. Okay, so I apologize, everyone, for those little technical glitches. So we were talking about aerospace, and Lou was mentioning the aging fleet that must be replaced all over the world, and it is about 40,000 planes. And new technologies driving the replacement of that fleet, so that's certainly very helpful. The other thing that's happening, interestingly enough, Lou, is we've watched, you know, we've had five shows on aerospace. And we talked about aerospace in the Pacific Northwest and then the Northeast and the Southwest. And we picked up a couple of interesting things. Aerospace moving to the Southeast and aerospace moving to Mexico.
That's correct. There's altogether now about 400 companies in Mexico, of which a significant portion of them are American companies that have moved down there. And one of the interesting things, and it didn't happen during the days of the Mejadores, was that we now have American management in these companies in Mexico. And this seems to be making a big difference. They've got better control on the employees. They've got better training programs and so on. So Mexico is getting a benefit. The American aerospace is getting a benefit as a result of the fact that from a nearshore standpoint, they are getting closer manufacturing at cheaper prices, at closer, more delivery times are improved. So nearshoring into Mexico is really beginning to play out. About 2 years ago, there were they did not have 400 companies down there. So I know that Harry Moser has talked a lot about the reshoring initiative, where a lot of business is coming back to the United States, which is also going to be causing a little bit of an additional glitch in the workforce group, the skill sets and so on. Again, aerospace is strong and will continue to be such. Down in your neck of the woods, Tim, Georgia, the Carolinas, a lot of the aerospace companies have moved in there and also have gotten incredible tax abatements and deferred taxes on profits and so on. So they're doing a terrific job down there. And in many cases, the educational level of the people in that part of the country is, let's say, different than Mexico. They're getting a benefit of that. So, aerospace is strong, and we are looking to do our share of business down there as far as the forging industry is concerned. And that's where aerospace is at.
Yeah, it's certainly looking very strong. Now, the other area that's been holding up manufacturing for the last 2 years at least is automotive. You know, automotive is just going wild. They're pumping out vehicles as fast as they can pump them out. There's now a shift back to the big SUVs that kind of faded when gas prices were nipping around $4 a gallon in the United States. And the hybrid cars and the electric cars were looking very promising because nobody expected that oil and gas prices would tank and start heading south dramatically. But that has driven the buyers back to the big, comfy SUVs because gas is now, I think, nationwide below $2 a gallon.
Well, we're paying here in New Jersey $1.69. A gallon for regular. So that's...
You must have a refining plant in your backyard. We're different than that in Georgia. We're about $1.89.
Well, it's interesting because we're near the New York border, and there's about an 80-cent a gallon difference. You know, New York State is just raping the public on taxes. So there's about an 80 cents a gallon. As a matter of fact, when you go up near the border, Jersey-New York border, you'll see all the gas stations up in the north are from New York, not from New Jersey. You know, everybody comes across and fills up. I mean, you almost get two for one.
Wow. Well, they're either paving the streets with gold or lining pockets with gold.
one or the other.
Wow. You know, the other thing that came up as kind of a recurring theme in 2015, as we talked to many guests over the year, was the graying of America and the skills gap. And really what came out of that entire conversation thread was that many of the companies who want to have their employee be kind of throttled up so they can walk into the job and handle the job are going to have to implement their own apprenticeship program. And we're seeing that from a lot of major manufacturers. They're putting back in the apprenticeship programs they took out 10 years ago.
Well, I think even the German methodology of apprenticeship is coming back. I mean, the Germans are still using it, and I think that that's beginning to make its way into our society here. One of the things that, you and I, what we've gone through in the last 2 years of producing Manufacturing Talk Radio is nothing short of a college education as to what's going on in this country. We've learned a lot. We've spoken to a lot of people, people in the know, some of the famous economists who will mention them a little bit later on in the show. But we've really gotten quite an education on what's going on. And frankly, I don't mean to pick on anybody, but I can't help myself. I'm not sure who's worse, Washington or mainstream media. If you recall, Tim, the L.A. port strike, I don't know if you spoke about this earlier when
not
I was
yet, no.
driving around the Beltway. The L.A. port strike, which started in June of 14 and concluded in March or April of 15, the U.S. government did not get involved until the beginning of March 2015. Obama finally threatened both sides when he should have done it 8-9 months earlier. That only cost the American taxpayer $3 billion a day. Mere chump change when I guess you owe $17 trillion. So what am I complaining about?
If anybody wants to entertain themselves for hours on end, try going to the U.S. Debt Clock. It's usdebtclock.org, and it fills the screen with lots of numbers.
It's like a slot machine that doesn't stop.
Yeah, this slot machine is wildly out of control. But you can see where the U.S. government is spending money at insane rates, clearly unsustainable rates.
It's actually just a moment or two on that, the debt clock. I found myself sitting in front of that for a half hour, going over all the numbers that are changing as I'm watching, employment numbers, unemployment numbers, personal debt, consumer debt, state debt. I don't know if you noticed that you can switch to state level. You can click on every state in the union, and they do the same thing. Every nickel of debt is being rolled forward. Have you seen it?
It's staggering.
It is staggering. So when you're bored and have nothing else to do, go to usdebtclock.org and enjoy yourself and see where your tax dollars are going and how fast they're going.
Yeah, be sure you take an antacid, Prilosec or something before you tune in.
And that was a non-commercial comment about Prevacid. you started talking about the skills gap and the gray hairs. And
my grandmother did bluer hair, so I understand blue hair.
Yeah,
my grandmother did bluer hair. So.
My sixth grade school teacher, Mrs. McCormick, she had the silver blue hair. She was the laughing stock of the school. Anyhow, getting back to what we're supposed to be doing here, we're losing 10,000 people a day who are retiring. And we are not replacing them by 10,000 a day. So, but there are different programs that are going on to get people into manufacturing. Not everybody has to go to college. Not everybody can go to college. Not everybody is of the academic nature to go to college. So you have the STEM programs, and you've got apprenticeship programs, and you've got attempts like manufacturingday.com, a combination of five of the national organizations that are promoting manufacturing companies to open up their doors so that youngsters and college kids or non-college kids or career change people can go back to into a field, take a look and see what it's like. It's not the old dark, dirty, and dangerous. It is, Tim has a new phrase.
Well, it's digital, it's dynamic, it's diversified, and it's demanding. Those really are the new D's for the four D's.
I think you just made that up just now. I think you just made that up. Because it didn't rhyme.
That was in our newsletter.
I know, it didn't rhyme. but nonetheless, it's not dark, dirty, and dangerous any longer. And except for some of the old guys that are still hanging on. But we met some people, young people that we got involved with at the manufacturing day. We took some, what did we have, 17, 18 students that we took to a manufacturing plant and showed them what it's really like. And I think the biggest stumbling block in this aspect is not the students, but I think it's the parents. The parents want their children to go to college, be the first in the family to graduate high school. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Tennessee, Kentucky, those places. Only kidding, folks. But there's a lot of programs going on, and the skill gap is not necessarily going to be as big as it was, as long as the organizations like NJIT and NJMEP and all the rest of the MEPs throughout the country, which there are, I believe, about 70 in total. There's an MEP in every state,
right.
at least one. I think Indiana actually has 10 or 12 who are offshoots of their primary site. Organizations like the FMA, Tim, you and I went to the FabTech show, where we got to see some of the most incredible new technology and equipment ever. I mean, it was like stepping into the future. And a lot of this equipment is manipulated and managed by an iPad.
Right.
So it's something that kids will ultimately like to do. And actually, we saw, I think they had at the FabTech, I think they had about 500-600 students that they took there. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, they did. They had about 500 students at FabTech who wandered the show floor to see, I guess there was 750,000 square feet that they had rented out and put in 12 million pounds of manufacturing equipment.
Yeah.
So it was stunning.
Matter of fact, I might make a self-serving comment now. On our website at mfgtalkradio.com, we have, I think, a series of 17 or 18 interviews that we did at FabTech. It's a audio video, and you can actually see us in our becoming infamous yellow jackets. I had somebody bump into me about 2 weeks ago. He said, "Are you the guys with the yellow jackets?" Yeah, I'm afraid so. This is also a good way to address some of the middle class shrinking issues. Get people working. The government throws out this 5% number of unemployed,
right,
that it's the lowest since 2007, Meanwhile, the real number, folks, is 10%. That's the number of people who are not working in this country. That's the combination. What are the two terms they use, Tim?
Yeah, U3 is people who are actually receiving unemployment benefits, and those are the ones who are counted as unemployed. What they're not counting is what they call U6, which takes it from 5% to 10%, lose correct. And that are the people who've given up. They're still out there. They'd still like to have a job. They've exceeded their unemployment benefits. They can't receive them anymore. They may or may not be actively looking for a job, but they're not counted in the 5% on the U3 because they're off the government goal of unemployment benefits. So they're on their own, and it's an ugly place to be.
So in other words, in government terms, if we're not paying you, you don't count.
That you don't exist, that's right. If
right.
we're not paying
if
you
we
or
pay
you're not
you,
paying us.
Right. If we pay them, then the unemployment number goes to 10%, and they've been running a ruse on the citizenship of this country for years.
Oh, clearly. Yeah, I've railed against this long before Manufacturing Talk Radio, but I'm glad you're bringing it up, Lou, because it is a smokescreen. The U3 is a smokescreen.
Yeah, and you never hear media talk about mainstream media. You know, and you don't hear the politicians out there talking now in their debates saying, oh, we only have 5% unemployment. It's a ruse, folks. It's 10%.
That's,
U3
that's
versus U6.
Yeah, so. And go take a look at the U.S. debt clock and you'll see it. You know, the other thing that's interesting that we talked with Dr. Chris Kuehl, he is an economist who works with the FMA. And we also talked with Norbert Ohr. And we've talked with Norbert, who happens to be a director of research for global business surveys with a company called Strategus Research Partners, about what's happening globally in terms of the graying. And I asked him whether or not the graying is limited to America or is it a global issue. And in fact, it is a global issue. One of the interesting corollaries of Russia's seeming expansion into former satellites is that what President Putin may actually be after is not resources there, not natural resources. He may be after human resources. In other words, that group of people in those bordering countries who are much younger than the average age in Russia. The average age in Russia, I think, is in the mid-40s and climbing, and he's literally running out of youth for the next 10 or 20 years.
This sounds like a theme for a bad sci-fi movie.
Well, interestingly enough, even China is running into the problem. They just backed off their one-child policy that they've enforced for two or three decades, and they said, you know, have as many kids as you want.
Well, the reality of that, let me clear that point. The reality of that was that, yes, at one time they had the one-child policy. And then about 20 years ago, they said, well, it's a one-child policy, but if you want, you can pay for a permit and you can have two. But don't tell people about it. So there was a tax. If you wanted to have a second child, you had to fill out a form, pay your tax, have your child, and that's the story. Soon it's going to happen that they're going to wind up forcing you into having three children because they're now moving. They're moving all the people in from the cities, from the rice paddies into the big cities because they need administrative people, they need finance people, and so on. Meanwhile, they're running a 3% food deficit. So it's kind of the left and right are not working in sync with one another. So
are they being guided by our Congress?
Say again?
Are they being guided by our own Congress?
Maybe. Maybe. Well, our Congress has a lot of influence. They don't do a lot, but they have a lot of influence.
Lou and I were talking about Washington yesterday, and we came to the conclusion that Washington, D.C. does not stand for Washington District of Columbia. It stands for Washington Dysfunctional Congress. That's what the D.C. stands for in Washington, D.C.
I thought D.C. was doesn't care.
Yeah, that could be the other one.
I hope not too many of them are listening because actually they're nice people. I happened to look at a voting record about a month ago, and there are congressmen who in a period, there was one in particular, I won't use names. There is one in particular. He's been in Congress for 4 years. He's voted five times. And I hazard to guess what those topics were, but they're not working. They're just
not working. We have talked to some terrific people in the government, in NIST, in MEP, in Department of Congress, in Department of Labor. I have to tell you, those folks are terrific to work with. They're very anxious to help, but when it comes to elected politicians, folks, we got a real problem.
Yeah. You know, being that you brought up government, you know, maybe it's appropriate to bring up about the other major issue that occurred this past year, and that's Ex-Im Bank. And I'm not sure that all Americans really know about Ex-Im Bank. And basically what it is, it's a credit facility set up under the Department of Commerce. It means Export-Import Bank. And they arrange for about 60 to 70% of the people who, the companies that can borrow money for projects and orders and so on, are small to medium-sized companies. That said, companies like Boeing, companies like Caterpillar and GE also borrow money from the bank. And matter of fact, many overseas contracts that are released require that the funding must be preset by some credit facility. Could be Ex-Im Bank in our country. It could be their version of Ex-Im Bank in their country. But the funds have to be up and available. And it states that if you don't have the funding, you can't bid on the job. So, matter of fact, that's why General Electric, one of their divisions, I think in Milwaukee, moved to England within the last 3 months. They also opened another division right across from Detroit in I guess it's London, Ontario. So these are jobs that our government is letting slip away because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They did finally pass the Ex-Im Bank funding again. However, they left out a little loophole, and that is that according to our sources, you have to have five governors in the Ex-Im Bank in order to be fully functional. Well, right now there's only two. Obama has not picked the other three. And the reason why he probably hasn't picked the other three is that the other three have to be approved by Congress. So we just went around the barn, kicked ourselves in the butts, and Congress, the Republican Congress, probably will be looking to, again, undermine Ex-Im Bank and keep a lid on it. But lend out up to $10 billion per contract, which usually doesn't fit the appetite of the GEs, the Caterpillars, and the Boeings. So Ex-Im Bank right now is kind of on hold because Mr. O is off in Hawaii playing golf, visiting with family, and so on. And I'm sure that the American people right now are not at the high point of his thinking process. Even though I heard that he did find out about the town in Iraq that was taken over by the rebels, and he's watching that very closely, but not as close as I would like to see our government working.
Yeah, the other thing that we have to watch going into 2016 is the number of regulations that the government is laying on top of manufacturing. They lay it on top of all business. Manufacturing has got a real problem. The U.S. government, I guess the way the Congress works is they pass a law. But if you actually read the law does not define what you can and cannot do under the law. They take that portion of it, and they pass it off to an agency, you know, the EPA, for example. And the EPA then comes up with regulations, which have the power and force of law under what the Congress passed. But they come up with regulations, and some of the regulations you're beginning to hear about literally are going to drive down jobs in the U.S. if they're enforced, if they're not rolled back. I realize all good intentions, but they're implementing them almost immediately or in the very near term, when it may take 10 years to correct those issues because technology hasn't caught up with what the EPA is requiring. And the only way you can make up that gap is for manufacturing to take the hit. Now, the challenge for manufacturing is, all right, now I've got to spend a bunch of money to implement a regulation. Where's the money coming from? I'm not selling any more product. I can't raise my prices because the current growth in the economy is not going to support an increase in prices. Where am I getting the money? I'm not going to borrow it. That would be foolish. So it's got to come out of the biggest expense that manufacturers have, and that's wages. So they're not raising wages. The more regulation that government puts on manufacturing, the more downward pressure they're putting on wages. And now it's become so extreme that manufacturers may have to actually take out jobs. They may have to run more lean in order to pay for the regulation and not pay paychecks. So think about that, folks. Your elected representatives may be taking away your jobs through regulations that really a whole lot of them are not necessary. I know that Glenn Beck on one show in 2011, just for that year, stacked up all of the regulations and the laws. The laws were 739 pages. The regulations were 89,000 pages and was a stack much taller than Glenn Beck. So that's what's happening in terms of the government. They may be crushing your job. That's a concern for manufacturing, Lou.
Well, you know, there's some numbers that I've been looking at. For example, the food stamp program in the United States. I don't know if you have any idea how many people are on that program. There's 150 million people working, and there's 45 million people on food stamps.
You know, it's staggering because I had a conversation in a local restaurant, and I said at that time that 47 million people were on food stamps, and somebody two tables away stood up and said, it's 4.7 million. Why don't you check your facts? Now, I was being polite. I didn't want to bash him with the facts, but Lou's numbers are right. A third of the country is on food stamps. What's wrong with this picture, folks? So,
and the people that live in poverty tend to live in poverty for 15 years before they get out. So they have all these facts. They have all this information, and they're not doing a thing about it. And it's really pathetic. You know, when we were at the FabTech show, we met an organization, Warriors.
Workshops for Warriors.
Workshop for Warriors. And this gentleman, and I'm sure Tim will remember the name.
Yeah, Hernan Luis y Prado. Great guy.
That's great. How do you do that? How do you remember all these names? This gentleman is fabulous. He was a three-tour naval officer in Iraq, I believe. Was it Iraq?
Right.
And his group was the one who collected the bodies, a very painful experience. And when he came out and saw his friends and people, he's from San Francisco, he's near the naval yard there, and he sees the crippled, injured, handicapped warriors, he decided to build an organization that teaches the handicapped warriors jobs. And he's doing a phenomenal job. He was actually at the White House only about 3 weeks ago. And he's growing. He wants to build 500 schools around the country, which is, I give him a lot of credit. That's a big number, though. Right now he has one. But he's doing a fabulous job. He's turning out 60 students every 3 months. I believe.
That's right.
He gets 100% placement. And this is part of the creative things that we need to do to fill the gap, the employment gap. Matter of fact, we were sitting around the old studio a couple of days ago. We were kidding around about a topic, and one of our editorial people came up with felons with a future. And if you think about it, you know, it struck us all very funny at first, but then we thought about it and say, wait a minute, we have more people in jail in this country than anyone else in the world. We have 3.3 million people in jail. More than 50% of them are nonviolent or low-level drug issues. And it costs $50,000 to $60,000 per inmate to support them, to rehabilitate, which is a joke, because what happens is they become criminalized, just like the jihadists become criminalized as well. And instead, perhaps the drug war that we've had in this country going on for a number of years is failing. Let's get those people out in the street, get them jobs, get them trained, and get them working. Most of them shouldn't be there in the first place. So we have these pools of people that could be working in the manufacturing sector and others. Women in Manufacturing organization, womeninmanufacturing.org, we did a show with them, and it's all about women getting into manufacturing. I met some of the brightest women that day. That are committed, and it's a national organization today, that are committed to help women get jobs into manufacturing sectors. So there's lots and lots of things going on. I think the government doesn't do their appropriate way of getting the information out. I think that mainstream media is also negligent on this. You know, if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. We have been committed on Manufacturing Talk Radio to bring this type of information to the forefront, and hopefully get the right guests who can. We ask the right questions, they give us the right answers, and hopefully there are people throughout the United States that are getting a benefit out of listening to our show. And there's much more to come. Much more to come.
You know, it's interesting, Lou, you mentioned the industry associations that we've worked with, ISM, NAM, PMA, FMA, SME, IAW, CCIA. There's a lot of great associations out there, and we're working more and more closely with them because they're bringing important information that we want to broadcast here on Manufacturing Talk Radio to the manufacturing sector. So it's important that you folks take a look at those organizations, and if you're not members, consider being a member. Certainly, we're going to be covering what those organizations are doing here on Manufacturing Talk Radio, and we'll continue to work with them in 2016.
By the way, to shamelessly plug ourselves, I just wanted to mention that those of you who know FF Journal magazine, there's a big article in there about one of my favorite topics, and that's Manufacturing Talk Radio. So take a look at the January issue. It'll be in print and online. And the online is FF Journal or Google FF Journal, and you'll see our bright and smiley yellow jackets.
Yes, indeed. Now, one of the areas that we looked at, one of the sectors that we've been watching over the course of last year, and you've heard a lot about this in the news, you know, what is happening in oil, gas, and mining. Coal mining in this country has had enormous regulatory pressure put on them, and with the decreasing cost of oil and gas, coal is actually becoming non-competitive as a fuel source. So we've seen several of the large mining companies go bankrupt. They file for bankruptcy. You're seeing Brent crude, which is, by the way, Brent crude is the cleanest form of extract that you can get, and that's going for $35, $36 a barrel for an oil price. There are less clean oils that come out, tar sands, shale oils, those are in the 20s. Some are in the teens because they're a less desirable, thicker, dirtier, harder to refine extract for oil. But oil and gas is going to really struggle, we think. Natural gas will probably do okay, but oil has a problem. Oil's problem is technology. You know, we used to drive cars that got 8 miles to the gallon, then they got 10, then they got 12, then they got 15. Now the hybrids are getting 50. The government's put out a regulation that they want, they think it's 25 miles to the gallon by 2025. So technology is pushing gas further down because we can burn more out of a gallon of gas for a car. So that's going to be a problem. You know, the days of $100 a barrel oil, don't know that they're coming back. Lou has said frequently, you may see 20 before you see 40. I think he's right. So it's going to be a struggle for him, Lou, but metal powder is an interesting one. Share that with our listeners.
There's, as a matter of fact, we have an article on Manufacturing Talk Radio about metal powder energy. And the way it works is they effectively pulverize and turn metal steel into a combustible energy source. One, it's finer and you're using a lot less of it. Because of its content, it burns a lot hotter. So you're getting more energy with less volume. But the beauty of it is that the gases that it throws off, and I heard some of you naysayers out there, the gases that it throws off is nitrogen. And our atmosphere is made up of 79% nitrogen. So it may even be almost a self-cleaning process to get all the other pollutants that's been floating around in our atmosphere for years, the hundreds of thousands of tons, will actually dissipate. I think there's a lot of work to be done on this. And if I'm not mistaken, the type of furnaces that you need to use this are not that much different than our existing furnaces. You have to hook up some adapter. So you don't have to replace all these factories and plants. You just have to implement the adapter, so to speak, to be able to utilize this. It's probably an expensive process at first, but as people start using it, companies start using it, it will get cheaper and cheaper. And then you won't be worried about the coal industry. You'll be worried about solar and wind power, which now represents a rather significant portion of our energy footprint. I think it's somewhere around 30-35% now is solar and wind. So the evolution of technology as it has continued from the buggy whip to powder energy is quite a 100-year trek, and I think it's going to ultimately prove that these are the things that we need to do to help our planet, save our planet, and so on. Which brings me to the Paris Climate Agreement, and I think Tim has a couple of poignant points about that, and then I'll jump in and trash them.
I'll let you go first, Lou. You've watched the COP 21, I guess they called it.
Yeah, COP 21. It's a conference of participants. It's the dumbest name that they could have ever come up with. Why not call it the climate summit? No, they called it the whatever it is I just said.
It's not really
not been a very successful promotion after 21 years, but this time they did sign an agreement, and it's a non-binding agreement, but at least they're all on the same footing. And matter of fact, the week after they signed the agreement in Paris, Beijing had the worst polluting days that they've had in the last 20, 30 years, where literally Beijing was shut down, no transportation, you were not allowed to go out of your house, manufacturing had a shutdown, the coal mines up in the north had to cut back, and it's really been a very bad situation there. But I think that the Paris Climate Agreement, given time, will have an effect. And they've given the participants till 2038 to reach the goals that were set within the agreement. So that's 33 years from now, 23 years from now. And that will give industries today time to evolve into the new technology. It'll give time where industries who are polluters will have time to change equipment, adopt new technology, and you won't have to worry about the people who are in the industry, because over that period of time they will be retiring out. New industries will be created as a result for compliance to the Paris Climate Agreement. So there's a lot of good things that are going to come out of it. And for the naysayers who don't believe that there's climate control, climate issues, last week here in New York, I went to a drugstore. It was at nighttime. And I pulled into a spot, and my headlights were still on, and I'm looking straight ahead, and I see this white thing growing in the grass. I got out of the car, and I walked up to it, and it was a dandelion. This was December 22nd or 23rd. So I took a picture of it. Matter of fact, we might even put it on MTR, talking about MFG, rather, talking about climate control. And I'll show you the picture of my beautiful dandelion at nighttime showing up just like a white snow. So, again, for those who don't believe in climate control, you can listen to Tim now.
Yeah, actually, there's a couple of issues. In all of the conversation I hear about global warming, I never hear about one factor, and that's called the sun. Now, the reason I bring that up is I grew up in the great state of Wisconsin, and 20,000 years ago, not 200,000 or 200 million years ago, 20,000 years ago, there was an ice sheet that covered the state of Wisconsin that was a mile thick. And there's actually very interesting land formations caused by that. And in southwestern Wisconsin, it didn't actually cover that area. She has some rolling hills. So the rest of Wisconsin can be fairly flat. I was in Wisconsin last summer, and I did not have a head-on collision with a glacier. So it must have melted. So the Earth has been warming for a long time. Matter of fact, if you look at the formation of gold on the planet Earth, it was formed at a time when the planet Earth was a molten mass. That's the only way you can form gold, is in a molten mass planet. So you know, the Earth cools and warms and cools and warms. The issue is the speed at which it's doing it. And the real question is man contributing to the problem more than cows burping and farting? I hate to say that, but they actually have measured the impact of cow flatulence on global warming, and they say it's a significant impact, so we should all be eating plants and not steak and reduce cow.
Well, I think then we should give to the cattle Pepto-Bismol. It dissipates gas beautifully.
That's right. A little Beano for the cows.
And the that's it. Lot better. That's it. Absolutely.
But not to beat that subject to death, you know, it is. There's a lot of things we need to look at in terms of what we've done to the planet, clearly. When it comes to water quality across the world, we've polluted everything you could possibly pollute. Now, there's another thing that the American public needs to be aware of. there's a sense with the Water Quality Act that's now being implemented, and the EPA is in charge of that, that what we're doing is we've stopped polluting water sources. Ain't true, folks. There's something called a permitted discharge in almost every municipality across the United States. And that means you are permitted to discharge a certain amount of toxic stuff, often called volatile organic compounds, directly into rivers and streams because it's at a controlled rate. So it should dissipate, and the parts per billion should be so small that it shouldn't kill us quickly. It will just kill us over a long period of time.
How about the fish?
The fish are going to absorb it.
Yeah, don't eat bottom fish.
Don't eat any fish, and don't eat any shellfish. So, you know, when you hear these things, look at them a little bit, because the government's not quite telling you the whole story. Just the rosy part, just the politically correct part. So that's what's going on. Now, another area that we talked about in Manufacturing Talk Radio was technology. And Lou brought up an interesting point. You know, we always worry about technology hitting manufacturing and taking away jobs of humans. And we're seeing a lot in robotics, 3D printing, the Internet of Things. But that's not what happens. What actually happens are more jobs are created because people have to create the technology, manufacture the technology, deliver the technology, install the technology, maintain the technology, and program the technology. So there's more and more jobs created. They're just different jobs. And that, I think, is exactly what's happening in manufacturing with all of the technology that we'll talk about in 2016.
Well, I think the classic example, and I hate to beat this one up, but you know, how many people were making buggy whips versus how many people are making cars?
Well, that's right, Lou. Back in 1900, the seventh largest company on the New York Stock Exchange and in the Dow at that time was a buggy whip manufacturer. And they're not here anymore. So,
right.
Interesting point.
What was the name of that company?
You know, I don't know, but I could look it up. But they were very large, and they had an opportunity to go into leather handbags. They used to make buggy whips and saddles, and mostly for the horses that were used at the time for transportation. And they decided not to go that direction, and they didn't survive.
Bad decision.
Yeah. Now, in terms of survival in 2016, let's take a look at the economy. What's happening with it? Where is it going? What do we think 2016 is going to look like? And I'll give you my projection, and then Lou's going to give you his projection. My projection is we're going to see GDP at 1.5, maybe a 2. Now, you have to give me some leeway. The government comes out with a GDP quarterly update, and their first number is always wrong. Sometimes it's wrong because it's too low. Sometimes it's wrong because it's too high. But it's always wrong. It's an estimate.
Or bogus.
Or bogus, like the Chinese are accused of doing. Then a month later, they revise it. And then a month later, they finalize it. So as I say, 1.5 to 2%, if the first quarter comes out at a 3, wait till the second quarter to see what the real first quarter number was. So I think we'll have to be at 1.5 to 2, Lou. You're more bullish than I am.
Well, I'm going to use a phrase that Chris Keel, the economist, uses when he talks about projections. And Chris, I hope you're listening. So I'm giving you credit for this great line. Economists talk and talk and talk and talk and make projections as to what's happening, what's going to happen, and so on and so forth. And he always ends that portion of his discussion with the following: unless. And the unless is the thing that changes everything. So I'm not sure if our projections are worth anything. I'm not sure if the projections that the economists give are worth anything. Sorry, Chris. Sorry, Ann. Sorry, Bud. Sorry. Who else is there? Tom Nieves. All you guys talk about what you believe to be true, and then unless happens. And the perfect example of the unless was 2 years ago. We had a most horrible winter. And the first quarter of 2013 was in the doldrums. Then we had 2014. And right. The first quarter was the remnants and the field and the Los Angeles port strike, which really hit the first quarter hard, and it still continued into the second quarter after they started cleaning up the ports and getting all the containers out of the ports with either dead fish or dead vegetables or whatever that had rotted to death. I'm hopeful because I'm saying that you can't have 3 years in a row that the first quarter is going to be lousy. So I'm a betting man, and I'm betting that first quarter will be better than the two first quarters of 2014 and 2015. So I'm betting 2016 first quarter, we're going to get a solid bounce. And hopefully it can sail us through the end of the year. So that being said, I'm looking at a 2.5 to 3 GDP. Now, go ahead, Tim. I see you.
Unless
all of a sudden the El Nino that we're experiencing, we had 70-degree weather the day before Christmas. I mean, it was incredible. And actually, today we had our first whiff of winter, little ice, little snow. But the point is that I think that the first quarter is actually going to wind up improving over. We don't know what the fourth quarter yet is, but we at All Metals and Forge Group, we are sensing that based on new orders and our backlog, have increased over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. So that's, and usually our business and most forge shops in the United States, December is not a big booking month. And yet we had a reasonably good booking month. There are forge shops in the United States that I know are doing absolutely horrible. I mean, we've heard one story where there was a 48% drop in sales, and it's one of the biggest Ford shops in the country. But we won't use names. And unfortunately, forgings are really a base commodity in many products that are being made and built. Aircraft, automotive, oil and gas, may they rest in peace, machinery builders, gear blank manufacturers, and I could go on for 20 minutes with that. But there is signs that certain segments are and will improve. So that's my feeling. I think we're going to see a 2.5-3.
Well, that's encouraging. I hope you're right and I'm wrong, because that would be a good thing for all of us.
Correct.
The other thing I'd like to do in terms of talking about the economy is I'd like to thank the folks like Brad Holcomb, Tony Nieves, Norbert Orr, Chris Keel,
Pat Lee,
all of the folks who sat down on the show and talked about the economy. And they're not necessarily in a position to make a forecast on a monthly basis. I know the ISM does that in December, and we had them on the show in December, and they'll do it again in May, and we'll certainly invite them back to share their update with us in May. All those forecasts are helpful. Here's the bottom line. So far, all of the forecasts are talking about GDP growth in 2016 and 17 in positive numbers. There doesn't appear to be anything out there that we have heard that someone is saying we're at the edge of the cliff and we're going to fall into recession. Nonetheless, you know, ISIS does something colossally stupid and awful, either in this country or to one of our big trading partners, that could hurt us.
Well, you know, when 9/11 occurred, the United States really went into a gray funk for a long time, several years.
Yes, we did.
And that's partly because we were so unaccustomed to a terrorist attack. Even though the American public right now is a little fearful as to what could happen, ISIS continues to make threats, but I don't think that the country, I think the country's stronger today than it was at 9/11 when a terrorist attack happens, San Bernardino happens, Paris happened. I think that those, for example, Paris did not go into a gray funk. They were, unfortunately, we're getting used to the fact that there's going to be terrorist attacks. And that's really horrible and pitiful to say. I feel bad for my kids and my grandkids that they're living in an environment that, oh, we had another attack. And the news media does that on a daily basis. This cop shot that one and that one shot the cop. The terrorist attacks, the terrorist threats. Matter of fact, this morning I heard that they're talking ISIS has made threats I forgot which kind. Oh, Belgium. They're threatening Belgium on New Year's Eve. And there doesn't seem to be anything they can do about this except for cut the head of the snake off. And somewhere along the line, and I'm going to voice my personal opinion here, somewhere along the line, there's going to have to be feet on the ground, and I'm not sure whose feet need to be there. But they need to address this and get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to see some manufacturing take place for the defense industry because we're literally running out of ordnance to drop on ISIS. So odd as it may seem, we have to make more bombs, and that's done in manufacturing. So 2016 could see a little defense department push.
Well, the part of the problem with that, and just to throw some numbers around, you know, the United States is doing about 11 sorties a day. When they were in Afghanistan and other parts of the Mideast during the recent wars that we've had there, they were doing 1,000 sorties a day. We're there, but we're there only in make believe. You know, Obama's theory about getting the countries that are circling in that area of the world to stand up, they should do that. But what are we doing to help them? You know, sending 100 advisors over there is really a pathetic attempt to deal with a global crisis. This crisis may make climate control crisis look like chump change.
Yes, very clearly. Now, the other thing to keep an eye on, and I encourage our listeners to go to mfgtalkradio.com. You're going to find some interesting articles there. The Congress just did pass the Omnibus Reconciliation Act to fund the government for a year, and they have made a couple of tax issues permanent, as I understand it, if I have it right. The Section 179, the ability to accelerate an expense was made permanent. That typically was something that they didn't approve until December. They let it languish the whole year. The limit was $25,000. The max was $500,000. But no one could do anything with it because it wasn't confirmed until December of 2014. And again, December of 2015. The trick being that in order to take it, whatever you were applying it to had to be plugged in and running by the end of that current fiscal year. Well, you know, they just approved it a week ago. That gave people about 10 days to buy a new piece of machinery, get it delivered, get it set up, and get it plugged in. It's not going to happen. They've made that permanent. This is the kind of move that held manufacturing back for several years now, and that's why the recovery hasn't been as quick. The R&D credit, that's another one that they appear to have made a permanent extension on that one. That's another one that's held manufacturing back. Now, I know most people will say, well, you know, you're going to make that investment anyway. Sometimes true, but when it's optional, they don't. When they have to, they will. And one of the things that Lou and I are watching that's a concern is a capital investment for manufacturing. One of the groups that we work with, NAM, has just come out with their manufacturer's outlook survey. I encourage you to go find it. Very interesting information in it. But here's the one that's a little unsettling. Capital investment projections. 0.1%. Folks, it should be between 4% and 7% to keep manufacturing churning in a competitive economy. And it's 0.1%. That means that the manufacturers are only putting in quick return, short investment kind of capital investments. They're not doing major machinery. They're not doing major plant construction. And that's what's held manufacturing back. And it's an unsettled government regulation environment. And that's what's kind of crippled 2014 and 15. We hope that goes away in 2016 because these tax breaks have now been made permanent. And here's the issue. Manufacturers need to plan. As I said at the top of the hour, a manufacturer makes something, it may take 6 or 9 months to make it. It may take a year. There's not much they bang out in 3 days. So they need to plan way in advance, and they're looking down the road 3 to 5 years and saying, what's the economy going to be like 3 to 5 years out? What's the consumer spending going to be like 2 to 3, 4 years out? Why should we make this? Why should we invest in it? So that's what's been holding it back. We hope it turns around. Luke?
You have to ask the economists.
That's right.
You have to ask the economists what's going to happen in 3 to 5 years. Chris, come on, why don't you call in, Chris? It's this is your kind of show. Meanwhile, the only thing according to NAM that's gone up, which is a healthy thing, is health expense. It's up 8%. That's the 8% only number up. That went up.
It's staggering. You know, you see sales are up a little bit. You know, the Affordable Care Act, let's call it what it was called, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to make health insurance more affordable. The cost of health insurance for an individual has about tripled since 2010, when the Affordable Care Act first became something that Congress was intent on doing. And every year, healthcare costs are rising and rising. And I just heard on the radio, who's driving back from Wisconsin recently here over the weekend, that for most Americans, their healthcare costs will be 10% of their income. But for the lower economic strata, those people making under $40,000 a year, 21%. Of their gross income for health care. Folks, that's not affordable. That's going to be crippling. Oh, by the way, you have to have it or you're going to get fined. I don't know how this is going to work out, Lou, but it's really hurting manufacturers who, you know, they try to put it as part of their package to attract an employee. Ouch.
Well, some of the big corporations have opted out of health care and decided to pay the penalties. There are companies that have done that. They've done away with health care, and they'll pay the penalty. It's cheaper than paying the health care.
It's true. It's very true. One of the large corporations in America, won't mention their name, their employee package for health care cost them $2 billion a year. $2 billion. The penalty was $600 million. So they flushed their health care program for their employees, and they paid the penalty. It saved them $1.4 billion. Staggering. So Congress is going to have to revisit it. This isn't a Republican or Democrat thing. This is an America. And I think, you know, Lou, you and I have talked over the years that something is missing from America, and it's called the patriot. Where's the patriot in America? Where's the guy or gal in Congress, in the House or the Senate, who's there for the country, not for the next election, not for the party, but for the country?
I happen to have an answer for you. The last American patriot was Harry Truman. And they didn't even give it. And they didn't even give him a ride to Union Station to go back to his home state. He had a cab. There are no patriots. And being that you brought it up, and we swore we weren't going to do it, we're down to our last 5 minutes or so of today's show, which I don't know if anybody noticed. We did extend it from an hour to an hour and a half. So your watches aren't wrong. It's just that we got caught on a roll. So I understand we have an election coming up.
Yeah, we sure do.
Yeah, well, right now we have a Carney Barker and a circus. Actually, NAM did they had a question as part of their survey about which presidential candidate would you like most to have a beer with. I'm not sure if that's the purpose of having a president, to make him available to the public to drink beers with, but Marco Rubio, he's number one that you would want to have a drink with, a beer, sorry. Donald Trump, he's number two. And I'd like to sit with Donnie and, you know, sit down and talk about old times when he was not this bombastic character that he's turned into. But what do you think, Tim? Where are we going with this election?
I'm declaring my candidacy for President of the United States. I'm going to go as write-in Tim Grady for President. There's no party. There's no grassroots organizations. There's no super PACs. There's no money. It's strictly write-in. There, now you can vote for something other than whoever ends up being the party candidate. Lou, for the last 6-7 elections, it's like, I don't want to vote. And my choices are awful.
Well, unfortunately, most elections have turned out that way in recent past. But the problem is this time is that we've had now 20 candidates, 17
right?
With the Republicans and three with the Dems.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm liking any of them. And, you know, if you would run, Tim, I would vote for you. No question about it.
I appreciate it. Question to you, Lou. You paid attention to the debates. You've watched them. I've stayed away from them.
I watched every miserable, painful moment.
I knew you would. How many times did the word manufacturing come up in all of the debates so far?
Well, that's really an unfair question because you've heard me bitching about this now for weeks. The word manufacturing, hold on, folks, listen to this. The word manufacturing was mentioned exactly twice. So are the Republicans for manufacturing? Are the Democrats for manufacturing? Maybe they are, but secretly, because they don't want to tell anybody. No, it's pathetic. You know, the manufacturing sector in our economy represents 20%, which also is equal to the countries in the world. 20% looks small, but in a global aspect, 10 other countries. So I don't know what to tell you. It's not good. They don't care about us. They treat us as stepchildren. they want the tax money. They want the tax money from the small guys. I forgot that. The big guys, they're letting them leave the country, take the profits with them, and they don't penalize them for it. Sorry, GE, Boeing, Caterpillar, and all the rest of you. Not nice. You got to pay your taxes. And actually, everything that's going on now, there's movements afoot of people joining up and not paying their taxes. And
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. It's unfortunate, but they just came out with a survey on how the people feel about the country, and the numbers are staggering. We're in the 90s. People who feel that the country is going in the wrong direction, 97%. People who are angry at the way the government is managing its affairs, 94%. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, folks, you're an American and you're unhappy. And I'm right there with you, and so is Lou.
Yeah, it's not a good situation, and I don't think that there's any short-term fix on this other than firing them all and start all over again. I don't think that this is the kind of government that the founding fathers had in mind. I don't think that the professional politician was really meant to be. I think that they have to do election reform, term limits, and that's the only way you're going to fix all of this. You got to get rid of the PAC money that control them. I mean, there's just so many issues that we've got to do, and they, you know, get up on the grandstand that they for these debates and talk about nonsense. Really nonsense.
Oh yeah. Yeah, truly do. It's unfortunate. So stay tuned, Lou, unless you have something else we want to share on one of the topics we've covered. I think we've run out of gas for our wrap-up show for 2015.
Well, I don't know. I got about 15 or 16 more 3x5 cards with all my notes on it. Maybe we ought to make a second show out of it at some point. But it's always fun to voice our feelings and our opinions. I hope we haven't offended too many people. We are thankful to the listeners. We appreciate the comments that you folks are sending in by email. And it seems as though that we're doing something good by what we're doing, and we're looking to continue to do that. And as far as the all the associations that we've been involved with, it's been really great having them at our side, and frankly, we're going to be doing probably a lot more with them. And I thank them all for that. So, Tim, New Year's is coming. I wish you a happy and a best, and I wish all of those who I just mentioned the same. And we look to see you and hear you back next week at our next show, which will be with Brad Holcomb.
Brad Holcomb from the ISM.
From ISM. And we'll start off the year talking about December and see how bad this month really was, or good, maybe. Folks, thanks for listening. And go to Manufacturing Talk Radio. That's MFGTalkRadio.com. And listen to our 126 shows. Tim?
We've had a lot of great shows, Lou. I appreciate the opportunity to work with you and have All Metals and Forge Group sponsor the show. Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners. We're grateful to all of the guests who have joined us over the last 2 years. There are a lot of great articles that are coming online at Manufacturing Talk Radio, MFGTalkRadio.com. Please check in there. Thanks all for listening. That wraps us up for our show today. We'll be back in 2016 with our kickoff show with Brad Holcomb. Once again, thanks for listening to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at MFGTalkRadio.com.